Welcome everybody to Mike TV. This is episode 39, in which we will be covering Better Call Saul, season 5, episode 6, Wexler v. Goodman. My name is Lisa. Joining me is Dean. Welcome, Dean.
Hey, Lisa. How are you doing today? No COVID, I assume?
Nope. Still COVID-free. Still holed up in my home. Going stir crazy, but hey, I'm doing it. What about nice. You?
My wife tells me I'm the worst about social distancing and self-quarantine because I have not gone one single day without leaving my house at least once.
Well, and you're still feeling healthy and well. And
okay. I'm still feeling good, and I even told her if the whole family gets it, it's all my fault. But I go to – not only do I – well, I go walk every day, which isn't a big deal because I don't see anybody while I walk. But I go to the store at least once a day.
Yeah, I would say we've been averaging – Sean's been doing the store runs mostly, but we've been averaging – I mean, we're pretty stocked up on food, but you always find like you just need this one little thing, you know?
Exactly. Well, and it's almost that every day we take an inventory every morning. Yeah. Like we're fine on food, but like you said, it's little things. I'll be like, hey, what do we need today? And I'll we think of something. I actually out today. The only reason I went out was because I have some friends who live a little bit far from me who haven't been able to find toilet paper. So I did a good deed. I did the Autumn Fisher route and nice. Went out and scoured the stores. In fact, actually, Thursday mornings is one of the worst days. The best days are to go Tuesday morning, and I think Friday morning is when you're going to see the most stocked up stores.
Interesting.
But today I went to 3 stores and finally found 2 12 packs of toilet paper, and I took the last 2 right as some old lady was turning on the aisle. I made sure I grabbed both of them. and I told her to back the fuck up.
This is not a good story.
Well, you know
this
what?
Does not have a happy ending.
It's a cutthroat COVID world out there. So
we all need toilet paper, Dean. You can't hoard it.
Yeah, that old bitch can buy some Depends. But I was doing it for other people, so that's why it made me feel okay to say that.
Yes, you're like the Robin Hood of the COVID.
Yeah, yeah, I steal from the old. And I give to the not nearly as high risk. Yeah.
Yes, perfect. Okay. What? All right. Well, let's not dive quite into this episode yet because we have a lot to say. Have you been watching anything else during your COVID-cation?
Well, right after Saul, we had new dispatches from elsewhere. And this week we learn a little bit more about Clara, who they've been searching for.
Yes.
So good. It was a interesting episode. I will say it's a little bit slower because it was very it was flashbacky and very expository. And I didn't find Clara nearly as actually a I don't know, I wasn't as bought into her as I am for this team of 4. But the show's still good, still very trippy, very very interesting in the sense of it's out there, so you got to stay into that. This is the episode that made me feel like, oh yeah, this is a true Legion show, because this is one of those episodes where it's like, if you're not into the show, you're gone at this point.
I'm embarrassingly still, I guess now 3 episodes behind on it. I've watched only the first 3. I will.
You got time to binge it, so.
Yeah, I will. A lot of our shows are about to come to a screeching halt. You know, there's some shows that are airing, such as The Walking Dead, which never finished and still had production for its finale that was halted. So now the finale won't air. And we're going to see other shows coming to an end or just being like on hiatus. And of course, we know no production is going on for shows that we were looking forward to coming out later this year. So I feel confident I'm going to have time to catch up on dispatches from elsewhere.
So have you had anything else to watch? I mean, I know we just talked a couple of days ago since our Westworld talk, but have you had anything else to watch since then?
I mean, I watched episode 4 that dropped on Hulu of Little Fires Everywhere, which dropped this week, and it was good. That show is good. Again, if you liked Big Little Lies, then this is the show for you. Little Fires Everywhere. It's really good. And if you enjoy just, again, good acting, family drama, and, of course, Reese Witherspoon. What's not to like about her?
Well, some good news for those of you who are worried about your favorite shows being canceled during this coronavirus epidemic. There is one show that will not be interrupted during this pandemic. And that's right. That's why this show is America's show. This show will not refuse to quit. It will not turn down in the fear of this pandemic. And that is...
This is the armpit of America's show.
The Masked Singer Season 3 remains strong. It will keep going. And this week, the T-Rex, yes, the T-Rex was unmasked. And it was YouTube sensation JoJo Siwa.
I don't even know who that is.
I didn't know who it was either, but my kids most definitely did.
Wow. It's a whole new world. It's a whole new COVID world.
She is YouTube idiots
are stars.
Yeah.
When are you and I going to become stars? That's next.
Right. I'm going to, in fact, you'll hate the show until I'm on season 6 in like 2 years.
I'll watch it then.
Yeah, there you go. JoJo Siwa is a YouTube singer. She's 16 years old. She's known for her giant bows in her hair and also apparently known for being made fun of for her giant forehead.
Aww.
Because apparently she has tied her hair back so tight over her entire life that like her hairline is so high up that she has this gigantic forehead. And yeah.
I got news for you. At 16, your hairline does not change no matter how much you wear your hair up or how tight. Affecting your hairline until like, you know, 30 years into your life. So.
And she's just genetically, unfortunate. But unfortunately for her, she's 16 and will make more money than you and I will ever make combined times 10. So
and good that, for her. The fact of that really pisses me off.
But hey, we got that $3,400, that $2,400 coming soon.
We'll see.
Yeah.
Hey, and listen, I mean, I'm not going to lie. We need it. And I heard this week's Radio Labyrinth and Steph gave me the glimmer of hope. And I'm so glad she gave the PSA about how you can call your mortgage company and defer your mortgage payment right now with ease.
Yeah,
you get unemployment with ease.
Same thing with student debt.
And it is. It's all automated. I made one call to my mortgage company and just went through an automated process and boom, I'm deferred. I mean, it's... Every little bit helps right now.
I did the same thing with my wife and I's student loans. We deferred it. And in fact, it was originally supposed to be 60 days, but for student loans, they just extended it to September 30th. So, I mean, that's 6 months of, $500 to $600 a month to where you don't have to pay it. And it's nice.
2020 was our year because we paid off our student loans last year, the end of last year. And we were like, no student loans, finally. Right.
Yeah.
And you know how old we are. So this is how much you have to look forward to, how long it takes, which is outrageous. It is ridiculous. Never has money been just thrown away in my mind.
Right. Yeah.
Anyway, this is not economics podcast. This is Better Call Saul podcast.
But I'm an economics teacher, Lisa, so I could do this all day.
Okay. All right, we'll start another podcast.
When we're still in isolation in June, that will be one of our podcast bonuses.
When it comes down to – I mean, my job is still actually, I'm happy to say, going pretty well. We were really designed – our company was designed for remote work and – we were already really ahead of the curve with online meetings and things like that, virtual technology. Yeah. You know, we're really well versed in those tools and the skill set. So, but still, it's if our clients are cutting back, you know, it's ultimately going to affect us. So it's just this spiral. It's this trickle down. You know, everyone's feeling it.
Well, that's, my wife and I are teachers, and as much as most teachers, and I've never been one of these, but as much as most teachers complain about how we don't get paid enough or whatever, we're actually in a freaking catbird seat right now because our jobs aren't going anywhere. We still have jobs. We don't have to actually go into work. We're doing online learning right now. Kemp just passed that it's going to be at least until April 24th or something like that. So at least until the end of April, basically. But our jobs are secure, and so, we're fine. It's hard. It's different doing online learning. We also have our own kids that we have to now homeschool basically each day, which thankfully our kids aren't. It's because they're teacher kids. They're used to doing things, so they're fine. But, I mean, it's tough for a lot of people. So I grant myself lucky. I grant my family very lucky in this time. And I feel for those who aren't in the situation. But you know what? We'll get through it. It'll be fine.
Yeah. Yeah. Thoughts and prayers, best wishes, all of it. What else can you do, What can
well, you,
you do?
Know what you can do? You can talk about Better Call Saul.
That's right. You know what? You have TV as your great escape, and it helps because this week, I loved Westworld, but I think Better Call Saul won the week this week because this was, without a doubt, the best episode of the season. This was incredible.
Yeah, and I definitely didn't get confused halfway through about what the fuck was going on, so that helped.
Any overall thoughts before we dive in? My main overall thoughts were, of course, Jimmy or Saul's big whammy is, of course, a commercial. We know Saul Goodman's thing is commercials. We saw all the commercials he's made, not only in Breaking Bad, but all throughout the course of Better Call Saul. And this was his creme de la creme commercial, and I just loved it.
I do, like you said, we've seen the commercials since Breaking Bad, but we really never saw his, like, use of the commercials in Breaking Bad, you know, like how he used them as a weapon or as a manipulator. But we saw that ever since, what, season two? I guess it wasn't even until late season three where he really started making those commercials with the air bomber, the plane and everything. And we really saw how he used these commercials as a manipulation tool. So it's really cool to see him put in full force this as a weapon.
Right, yes. A manipulation, perhaps that's how they started. I believe by the time the commercials were airing in Breaking Bad, they were just legitimately goofball commercials for business.
Right, yeah. But that's what I mean. We never saw how he used those commercials in Breaking Bad.
No. But maybe they were just airing over Albuquerque News because he had enough money by that point just to air regular commercials. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no,
you still
exactly.
See these like sleazeball, you know.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. But I mean,
like Associates commercials.
But we never saw him in. But we never saw him in Breaking Bad use the commercials as a tool.
No,
that's what I'm saying. So I love that we've seen that through Better Call Saul that he actually has used these as a tool.
Yeah,
like this is part of his repertoire. Is that this is like what he can throw out, and it shows his talents not just as a lawyer but as his, you know, as a producer or
director.
But this one especially where he's directing all these people.
Well, he's perfecting his craft, right? Because you can see how much he really enjoys the art of making, you know, a commercial. He really gets into it. This is what makes him so happy. So he loves telling all those people how to stand and pose and what to say, and it's
great. I think that's what makes him a good lawyer too, because he looks at the courtroom when he's in there as a production, right? Like he tells the people how to act, how to stand, how to talk. Like he looks at the courtroom as his shot, as his storyboard, basically
his stage. With all of his performers. That's great. All right, so we open on a scene of young Kimmy waiting for her mom to come pick her up outside of school. It's dark and she's got her cello with her, and it's evident that she's been waiting for a while and that she's pissed. Now, I knew immediately this was Kim because of the ponytail, young girl. And I was like, okay, here's a Kim flashback.
Right.
I liked that we got this. It reinforced the sentiment of, was the story that she told Mr. Acker about her childhood real or not? And
exactly.
I believe this makes me think that it was for sure real,
or at least truer than not.
I think true. Kim's mom finally does arrive, and it's evident to Kim that she's drunk, and so she decides not to get in the car with her despite her mom protesting that decision. And finally Kim just straps that cello on her back and decides that she's gonna walk those 3 miles home and ignore her mom. And this is definitely evidence of Kim's stubbornness. Like, this is, you know, you could see it in this young Kim iteration in her face. She was not going to change her mind. She was moving forward with what she decided, and nothing was going to stop her. Even I was yelling at my TV at this point, like, why don't you at least just throw the cello in the car? You know, why do you have to walk home with a cello strapped to your back? You could at least unburden yourself that little bit. But no, Kim was gonna just go all the way with it. What did you think of this scene?
I'm the same way. I thought it was Kim immediately, and like you said, the biggest thing I got from it was it gave credence to her backstory and gave us a little more mm-hmm. solidity in what her life was like moving forward. And yeah. that she's dealt with bullshitter liars her whole life.
Yeah, for sure. And these two performers who played young Kim and Kim's mother, they discussed these two actors on the Better Call Saul Insider podcast. And even Roby, our number one fan, Remotes One on Twitter, Roby writes to us at MikeTV1@gmail.com. Excuse me, MikeTVPodcast@gmail.com. And Roby wrote, is Kim's mom being played by Ray Seahorn? That voice and facial structure is almost identical. And I have an answer for that, Roby, based on what they said on the Insider podcast, that actually, no, that is not Ray Seahorn. Mm. I had that thought too. The voice and the cadence. I thought cadence, it was too. The tone, when
it looked, everything. It kind of looked like her. Yeah.
It did. And the actress who played her, forgive me for not knowing her name, but she did say that she studied Ray Seahorn's performance okay. in great detail to be able to deliver that. So she did a nice job, really good. And I wanted to say another thing about this scene, because I'm sure you didn't catch it. This just goes to show our age difference here. But did you catch that song that was playing on the radio in Kim's mother's car while they were sitting there having that conversation?
No, I didn't think about it.
Well, my ears perked up because it was a one-hit wonder from the 80s, a song that I loved. Probably I was maybe like in third or fourth grade, maybe, when this song came out, somewhere in there. That song was Affair of the Heart. Now, do you know that song? Don't look it up.
No, I'm not. Okay. I'm thinking it's not Eclipse of the Heart, obviously.
No, not totally. That's totally Affair Eclipse of the Heart.
Yeah, no, I know.
Bonnie Raitt or Bonnie Raitt. No, Affair of the Heart is Rick Springfield.
Okay, yeah.
Do you know who Rick Springfield
is? And I know Rick Springfield. Okay. Jesse's girl.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, okay. That's right. He had two hit wonder. Those were his only two songs, really. And Jesse's girl was a lot bigger than Affair of the Heart.
Actually,
Affair
of the Heart was good. Rick Springfield, and this has always been a joke between my wife's father, is that was his favorite artist growing up. And he was a young father. What? So like he still has like old posters of Rick Springfield, like that he has like framed, but in a closet somewhere in his house.
Over two songs.
Yeah.
This guy
yeah.
had two songs. Yeah, now, did he enjoy Rick Springfield when he was on General Hospital?
Possibly, maybe, I don't know. But, I mean, yeah. So like I said, her dad is 52 or 53. Mm-hmm. So I mean, like I said, he's sure. younger for our age, like or for his age as far as my wife and I. But yeah, so possibly. But I think it was the song. I think he was into like his style, what he looked like.
Yeah, well, who wasn't? God. You know, I think his looks carried him a long way. I mean, he could sing all right, but he was he was not that great. Clearly he had two songs. Anyway, that's right. Hilarious. That's really funny.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's a nice little scene there of young Kim. And we cut to the opening credits, and it's that phone booth scene with the phone book hanging and displaying Saul Goodman's ad. Seems like we've seen this one before this season.
I think we've seen...
I know we've seen it before in past seasons, but has it aired this season? Seems like it.
If not... this, I think it parallels to other, even, I mean, even think of the very beginning of, well, he doesn't use a phone book, but just the phone, the hanging pay phone when he calls at the beginning, in episode one. I think it's just a parallel look of the phone booth.
Oh, love
the pay phones in general.
Then we cut to this early Mesa Verde commercial.
Yeah.
God, I loved it. With Don Wachtel, who is Kevin's father. And, oh, there's a young Kevin in it, too. Little young pudgy Kevin. And Saul, we cut to Saul showing this commercial to his film crew. Love these guys. And he's discussing the production that he has in mind. He's got it all mapped out. But, of course, the camera guy, that naysayer camera guy, tells him that with all the graphics and the video effect thing that he wants to do, it's going to take at least a week, maybe more. And then the makeup girl reminds them that probably even longer, because they do have midterms after all. And then camera guy suggests that they cut a number of the shots because Saul is, you know, insistent that they get this done right away. Like, one day is all they have. And Saul just refuses to give in on any of his plans, doesn't want to cut anything, but finally decides that they can do it all if they only had a green screen. Was this early, like, in green screen technology? Because Saul doesn't know that it's called a green screen. He calls it a blue screen, doesn't know. This was early 2000s. Green screen technology has been around a lot longer than that,
It was, and technically you can use a blue screen. You can actually use any color. It's just that bright green or bright blue are used the best. So he's really not right. In fact, when he said that and they made fun of him, I kind of thought, like, that shows actually ignorance on their part, because you could use a blue screen if you wanted to.
Interesting. Well, anyway, then we cut to the production of the actual, or we cut to the actual film production taking place in the nail salon. And all of the actors are there and the light crew, and it's just a big scene, and they're all getting all set up and the green screen's all ready to go. And Saul begins to give them all the pep talk to all the actors. And then he gives them these great directives as they film each scene. It's just hilarious. All of his 5, 4, 3, 2, 1 magic, you know, his great
the facial expressions he's given. Yeah.
Oh, it's wonderful. And he's telling, you know, oh no, you don't have the Arthur Fonzarelli thing. I mean, he's just giving them all just so many props. I mean, what were your favorites? I didn't write them all down.
My favorite was, I think it was the old lady where he's like making the frowny face to her. Like, just his face is hilarious. And of course, when he's getting she's always the extra girl, you know, like she's never really doing anything technical wise, but it's the one always with the clipboard.
The girl, makeup girl. Yeah.
Making her scratch her arm. Scratch more, scratch, scratch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's like great. Those. Or the lady where he's like, can you just give a little bit of a smile? And she's like, no.
Yeah, that's the one he like starts making the frowny faces with.
Yeah.
Well, I love, as soon as I saw the video of the old commercial, and I know we're going to talk about this more toward the end, but that's when I even perked up, because we talked about this last week when Kim sees the trophy, and because she's the one that has, like, or we assume has the idea that has something to do with that, right? Or was it?
Yeah, because she saw the picture from Simon Ogg's investigation.
And so the idea. As soon as I saw the commercial, we talked about, oh, is he going to use maybe some kind of copyright thing or something like that? As soon as we see the old commercial and it's obvious that that's where they got the logo from, I'm like, oh, here we go. But then, of course, when I started hearing talking about green screen and stuff, I'm like, oh, wait a minute. Is he going to try to make a video of the father fucking the horse?
Yeah, I didn't know what was going to be in this commercial. I was dying to see it. Roby even wrote in his email that, you know, Roby writes his email while the show was airing.
Yeah.
So he does write, I hope we get to see the full video Saul's creating. What a great director he is. Yeah. He really is a great director. And I was thinking the same thing, but I was certain we would see it. I was just certain. I mean, there was just no way they were not going to show it to us. And boy, was it wonderful. Anyway, Kim arrives and Saul steps out of the nail salon to speak with her. She's not really interested in coming in and joining in on the fun. And he tells her good news. He's tracked down Olivia Bitsui, and she's living in a Navajo reservation. She's 92 years young, and he's going to give her a call in the morning. So he's really excited about what appears to be like phase two of this plan. And Kim suggests that they offer Mr. Acker $75,000 to settle. And he says, you think Kevin will go for that? And she says she'll just make up the difference of whatever Kevin won't pay, because she just needs to end it and move on. Here she is basically pleading with Saul, with Jimmy. We just need to have it just be done. Kim says Rich is suspicious, but Saul continues to plead his case, saying that they've got Kevin with this one. He just knows it, and Rich knows nothing. And Kim says maybe, but it's just not worth it. And Saul finally is like, okay, yeah, all right. Well, let me go in there and break the bad news to them. And let's just go in there and get cleaned, you know, get this shoot all cleaned up.
Yeah, we got cold pizza.
Yeah, and she decides to go in and help him. And then there is this pan out of the marquee sign above the nail. The place is just called Day Spa and Nail. So it just has a very generic name, but on this very generic sign is a phone number. And we're not, we don't have it queued up to play, but I'm going to
get it. I got it here if you want it.
Oh, you got it? It's hilarious. So give the phone number first. So we read off two voicemails, or we played two voicemails last week. Hopefully you enjoyed those. We found more in this episode. Okay, so this is the first one for Day Spa and Nail. It's so
funny. This number is 505-842-5325. And it'll take my phone just a minute to, there we go.
Remember to hit speaker. All right.
I got it.
Hello. This is Day Spa and Nail, best in Albuquerque. This number is for Day Spa and Nail customers and future customers only. Please leave a message or call back when we are open. Do not leave a message if you need a lawyer, unless you want spa and nail services first. Thank you for choosing Day Spa and Nail.
I love Mrs. Nguyen. I love her. And do not leave a message if you need a lawyer. Unless
I love
you
that she
need
throws
nail
that in.
And spa services.
Yeah.
She is great. And, you know, with all of these voicemails and this little extra touch that these showrunners do and these producers do, you know, they're actually like getting, you know, they're scripting these voicemails out, and then they're getting the actors to record them. You know, that's just a really, it's an unnecessary touch, but it's lovely. And I just appreciate so much that they do that.
Yeah. Well, right. I mean, it's not like, you know, we gush so much about PDpedia for Watchmen, and obviously we talked a little bit earlier this week about how much Westworld does their
supplemental material
too. Mm-hmm. And obviously, like, you don't need a bunch of fake websites and stuff for Better Call Saul. So this is kind of a cool little it has nothing to do with, you know, it doesn't add anything necessarily, but it's just a little nice, you know, like you said, they get the actors to spend 30 seconds recording something, and you have these little Easter eggs in there. So it's a cool little nod to the super fans.
Yeah, it makes me want to go back and rewatch Breaking Bad,
right,
and look for phone numbers in all of throughout that whole that whole series and call them all. And I wonder if they'd even still be active. Anyway,
I don't know.
And actually, earlier seasons of Better Call Saul. I mean, because this is really the first time I've started like pausing my screen, punching in the phone numbers on my phone, calling them.
Yeah, anyway. Her long distance bills through the roof.
Yeah. So next we see Kim and Rich are calling. They're on the phone with Paige. They're telling her that Acker is ready to settle, and they have a date on the books next week to meet with Goodman. And then after the call, Saul or Kim makes a very big heartfelt apology to Rich about how she spoke to him in front of everyone. And then he accepts her apology and says, never speak like that again in front of the troops. It really brings down morale. And then he says they have to make a big show now of walking out together and going to lunch and, you know, walking out in front of all of them. And so that's what they do.
Yeah, and he seems legitimately fine with it, right? Mm-hmm. Like at first, because
yeah, he's good boss.
At first it almost seemed like she kept going on with her spiel to where like it was almost he was just staring at her, basically being like, no, fuck you. But yeah, like he does kind of seem to accept her apologies at the end.
Well, and she seemed very sincere too. Hard to say whether she really was, but she seemed sincere. And, you know, here's the truth. This is just a good, you know, just good everyday life. If you are in charge of leading people in your job or just in your everyday life with your friends and family and children, if somebody apologizes to you, accept it and move on. Don't berate them and lord it over them and, you know, continue to why? Just
move on. Because there's no chance they're still fleecing you with their live-in boyfriend who's a lawyer who's still trying to fuck over your deal for millions of dollars. I mean, so just always just, you know, if someone apologizes to you,
listen,
accept it at face value 100% of the time.
I'm not saying there aren't people who can't take advantage of the apology, but it's just, you know, give people a chance and accept their apology and move on. You will be much happier. Assume that most people are being sincere when they apologize. Just not Kim and Jimmy.
Just not Kim and Jimmy.
Yeah. Or maybe Dolores.
Yeah.
Or maybe David Holler.
Well, David could be sincere and not sincere at the same time. Depends on which David you're talking to.
Okay. There, I just had to get a Legion drop in there. Anyway, next we see... This was so... Oh, my God. This was so funny. I even laughed hysterically on my rewatch of it. And I was so excited knowing it was coming up. So Saul has just gotten a couple of hookers released. And as they are leaving the courtroom, they're so pleased with his job well done of getting them freed. They offer him a quick rub and tug.
Yes.
You know, they say they'll, make it real clean. Won't get anything on his suit, you know, just to show how much they appreciate. Yeah,
they wipe him off with a warm towel or something.
Yeah.
Like that.
Oh my God, it was so funny. And he just politely, in his Saul way, declines. And as they walk off, he gets an idea. Yeah, touches his chin, strokes his chin, and that, you know, ooh, I think I could do something here. And he stops them and asks them how much for an hour of their time. Cut to Howard having lunch at his favorite restaurant spot. As he's walking in, he does stop and speak to a judge at a table before going to sit down with Cliff Davis of Davis and Maine. I finally remembered this man's name and the firm. Of course, this is Ed Begley Jr. Great to see him again. They do have a little chuckle and kind of a smirk about that judge that Howard had just spoken to, about how the judge was divorcing his wife and making off with a 22-year-old whatever. So they're being all snarky. This definitely shows how quickly gossip spreads in these circles. And boy, did a gossip moment happen for Howard. So as they're talking, in walks the two hookers. They just hang out and glare at him.
It's the best.
Oh, it is the best. And finally, Howard has no choice but to acknowledge them. And they lay in with the performance of a lifetime.
Howie.
Yeah, the whole thing is so hilarious. They're calling him Howie. They're saying he can't get a cruise if all he pays for is a tugboat. They're talking about some Dan guy or whatever. And finally, Howard stands up and he's like, I don't know this Dan or tugboat.
I don't know what a tugboat. Yeah. Yeah. Yes. I love the best part about that was the 30 seconds that they just stand and silently stare at him, you know, because they could have easily came in and started making a scene immediately. But they stare and he's talking and like you see his eyes keep darting over and finally, can I help you?
Oh,
I love it.
So, and he is doing his damnedest to get them to just leave and they just refuse. And meanwhile, to top it all off, Jimmy is sitting outside in his car watching through binoculars through the windows of the restaurant and making up his own narration of what he sees going on. And that is equally hilarious about like, no, you're not my hooker. You're the,
my hookers would be taller.
What it is. It was so funny.
My hookers would be taller.
Yeah. Great scene. Wonderful. Love that we got more Howard. Loved it.
Now, Perfect. Did you get a scene? All right. So I'm going to go ahead and I'll hit this narrative point because he drops his binoculars and now he's going to call the
Olivia Bitsui.
Yeah. Uh-huh. But before that, did you notice that when he drops the binoculars before he makes the call, he does give a look that almost seems repugnant of his own actions?
Yeah, I did catch that.
Like, he almost seems like,
Like, did I go too far?
Yeah, like, he does give this look of just, of self-guilt type of, you know, like, and I like that. I like that we are at least seeing some form of, like, there might still be a conscious. Now, we know that conscious is eventually going to fly away. It's not going to be there. But it's, at least it seems like it might still be there for now.
It was a flicker. And then he was able to shake it off.
Oh, yeah. Shook it off. Yeah, immediately.
So it didn't last long.
No.
I appreciated it was there. And that's just, again, a credit to – I'm sure it was part of the script and that's part of the great directing. But, again, Bob Odenkirk.
Oh, but he does – yes, Odenkirk does a great job of his just being able to flip that on for just a second and then go right back to turning into Saul.
Can't say enough about Odenkirk. Just can't gush enough about him. But then, yes, after that little flicker, he does – he's on such a high that that's when he makes his call to Olivia Bitsui. And he asks her if she's ever heard of a bank named Mesa Verde. And then I guess it's a few days later, but finally the big moment arrives, and it is the meeting at the Mesa Verde offices between the Mesa Verde lawyer group and Saul. And this is for the settlement. They are all in the office waiting for Saul. He's late. They're, you know, they're ready to just get this done. Kevin is anxious to just get it over with. So Saul does finally arrive fashionably late. Kevin is side sitting. Did you catch that? I was surprised a side sitting comment didn't come up. It didn't, but I did take notice of Kevin's side sitting. And it was interesting too, the body language, because Saul is just cocky as ever during all the introductions. They all stand up to shake his hand, but not Kevin. He sits there and won't even look at him until it's time for his introductions. Anyway, they finally do get down to business. The offer on the table that they've all agreed to is that they're going to give Mr. Acker $45,000, which is pretty nice considering what their original offer was, what, like $5,000 or something?
Yeah, which makes no sense, right? Like, I kept thinking this the whole time, like, they're... I get that they apparently own the land that he's living on, but still, that you would think that there would be more than it didn't seem like the number didn't match, like the eminent domain type concept didn't make sense, like how much they would be offering him. But
It's demonstrative that they're willing to pay more than what's above and beyond the call, because they want this pain in the ass Saul Goodman to go away,
right?
Because it's not going to end, right?
Right.
But you're right, being out 45 grand, it would just be easier to move the call center because that, you know, at this point, less of a loss.
Well, I know his pride's in the way, but still, as big as they are, just offer him $100,000. Like, I mean, at that point, you're a big ass corporation. Like,
oh, I think Saul puts a number on it that they're not too pleased with. Yeah. Anyway, Saul starts to dicker when they lay that offer out, and Kevin says, yeah, he expected that. And then finally, very bluntly, says, what is the number that you want to hear so that we can just finish this?
And now, again, at this point, this is what Kim and him, quote, plan to do, right? Because, they agreed on 75. Remember, that's what Kim, said she'd pay the difference or whatever, but it's almost like she expected, like, he would go more than what 45 was.
Oh.
So I think she thought that at most he would say 75.
Maybe, but you could see her face start to be like, what are you doing? What are you, like, she immediately, he was breaking from the plan,
But even from then, once Howard stepped in and said, or not Howard, I'm sorry.
Rich. Kevin.
Rich is Kevin. Once Kevin steps in and says, oh, I expected this, so give me the number. I think even then she was thinking like, okay, he'll just go ahead and say 75 or maybe 100 so we could ballpark it down or something. So I still think at this point she was okay with him.
She was
improvising a little bit. She was annoyed.
Well, she was annoyed really because he was late. Yes. I mean, that was the start of it. She was already like,
But I think she was slightly relieved when she felt that, okay, the boss is going to pay more.
Mm-hmm.
But then, of course, obviously, then
yeah,
he's going to go way above that.
Saul replies that the number they're looking for is 4 million, in fact.
Yeah.
And they all get really angry, Kim included.
Oh, Kim's
at this
face.
Preposterous amount.
God.
They really, Paige is like, that is ridiculous. And Kim is especially angry. She's speaking to him through gritted teeth. That's not the number we agreed on.
No, in fact, she even breaks. I feel like that was even more than she would want to say. Like, she even kind of broke through and said that, like, we've obviously, like, because everyone knows they have a personal connection or, you know, personal relationship. So she said, we had a verbal agreement, it wouldn't be that. So she's even breaking their trust in the sense of, like,
she's saying, and Saul, of course, with semantics, she's saying we had a verbal agreement. He's saying we had a discussion. So, Saul is, you know, shystery as ever. Finally, Kim says, okay, it's time. Kim knows there's another way, and she wants it done. So she says, okay, it's time to end this meeting now so that she and Rich can have a conversation with Mr. Goodman. And she's trying to very quickly get Kevin and Paige out of the room. So Saul doesn't waste any time. He jumps up and says, wait, you're going to want to stick around. I've got something to show you. He has DVD in hand. Kim's still trying to get them out of the office, but Saul says, wait, even your father's in this, Kevin. And that perks him up and says, okay, I want to see this. And we
Real quick, before we go to this. Now, again, Kim seems legitimately pissed, and she makes comments later like she's legitimately pissed. But even when she starts saying, like, as your lawyer, I advise you not to stay in here, like I'm telling you, like, is she in on this whole thing or not?
No. Well, she knew.
Because obviously
what Jimmy
she
was
knew
planning.
The whole corporate.
She knew Jimmy.
At least the copyright part, right. Not necessarily the commercial.
She saw the film crew. She knew there was a commercial. She knew there was something in production. She might not have known the extent of it, but she knew there was some, like, we're going to use, go after Kevin personally or attack the Mesa Verde brand.
So was she, but she seemed so pissed off even when he makes that. I mean, so was she just mad because he went way higher than his number? Or was that whole thing of a shtick? Like, the whole thing fake to begin with?
She went to him at the beginning of this episode and said, call it all off. I want to end it. And he kept saying, no, it's a masterpiece. We'll get him with this. And she's like, I don't care.
Right.
It's too risky. And so that, and he says, okay,
still going forward with it.
He says, okay, it'll disappoint the film crew, but I'll go let him.
Okay.
Out. So okay. She knew they were doing it, but she had called it off.
Gotcha. Yeah, that makes sense.
Okay. So this most amazing commercial of all time is aired in front of them. It is splendid. It is real and it is spectacular. It's okay. It's spliced.
So in fact, we can talk about it, but if you want, we can just go through all the details of it. If you want to go through the number.
Oh, well, wait. I've got the number in just a second. So
yeah, and I got the message.
Okay. So let me just explain. It's spliced footage of the commercial with Kevin's father, but his voice is all slowed down. And all throughout the commercial, there's these constant flashbacks of Kevin's father going, yep. And then there's these other yeehaws in the background. And it's different victims of Mesa Verde giving their statements as Saul pops onto the screen and does his Saul commercial thing, encouraging people to call him if they've been victimized also by Mesa Verde.
And every time one of the victims is on there, there's this quick scroll. Did you slow down and figure out what the scroll said?
No.
So the scroll every time says, and I'm going to paraphrase because I can't remember exactly what it was, but it's basically like, this is based off of an incident of fiction.
Oh, yeah.
So basically the scroll says, like, this is fake.
Yeah, these are actors. I did see, like, this is an actor portrayal. I did see some of that. Like,
but not even that it's, like, based off a true story. It's an actor based off of an incident of fiction. So it's basically saying, like, it's fake, but it's so fast that, like, of course, that anyone can make this up. Because his whole thing is, he just wants to ruin the reputation. He doesn't care about actually getting people.
The various claims that we see from the performances that were being filmed.
I think the message says
most
of them on here.
Well, we've got the phone number. So he does have a phone number in this commercial. And okay, go ahead. Yeah.
All right. The phone number is 505-503-4455. Here we go. Let's see. Make sure it's speaker. There we go.
It's the best.
Wrongful eviction, black mold, unwanted exposure to genitalia. What could these things have in common? A bank. I'm Saul Goodman. If you've been duped, swindled, or victimized by Mesa Verde Bank and Trust, you may be entitled to a large cash settlement. Leave a message after the tone, and I'll make sure you get to pick your bone.
Unwanted exposure to genitals.
Yes, that was my favorite.
Yeah, so it was wrongfully evicted from your home, been exposed to black mold in the Mesa Verde branches. Exposed genitals or bare genitals, I think, was the actual verbiage above it. And then there was even the one claim, which is not in the voicemail, where the guy says that they're funding terrorism.
Yes.
Verde's funding terrorism. Yeah. So Saul starts to talk about, like, they're getting really pissed off and hot in the room as each claim is made in this commercial. Saul threatens that the commercials will air all throughout the Southwest, and even if the networks don't pick them up, he'll get the news to pick them up, and then they'll air for free. Paige and Kim are claiming that it's all just a bunch of BS. Kevin is extremely angry, too, but says, you know, even if those commercials air at all, it's going to ruin their reputation, regardless if they're true or not. Then finally, Saul brings out a picture, a photograph, black and white photograph. He says, this is by Olivia Bitsui. It's a famous photo of hers. And Kevin cuts him off. He says, wait a second. My father bought that photo fair and square.
Mm, yeah.
And Saul says, right, your father bought a copy of the photo, but not the copyright to the image. And he holds the picture up to the Mesa Verde logo, which is still up on the screen where he'd been showing the DVD. And they are like just almost identical. And he says, well, I think I can get a jury to believe that this is copyright infringement. And he's like, you know, until then, you could just hang sheets all over all of your horsey statues and all of your branches until we get this thing settled. You know, maybe it'd only take a couple of years. And then he whistles himself on out the door. Hilarious.
What I love about this whole thing is how, you know, it is just based off of almost like the threat of something happening. Could you imagine Saul Goodman during the time of 2017 and beyond with the Twitter world and being able to get, like, you know, tweets of 500,000 or more people that really don't mean anything in the large scheme of things, but like you just get that Twitter wave of social media, like hate against the company to get them to backtrack on things. Like, he would be a master at that.
Oh yeah, that's what I want to see. There are plenty of masters out there.
I want to see. You know, the next Breaking Bad spinoff is Saul Goodman, 2021. Saul Goodman is the Donald Trump's press secretary.
Yes.
Right. Like, could you
imagine? Get that.
Saul Goodman is Donald Trump's press secretary. That would be the best.
Pitch it to Netflix or Quibi or any of those. Like, I hear they're doing shows on everything.
What is Quibi?
I don't know. Quibi
is that the one with Chrissy Teigen as a judge?
I don't know. I've not watched it, nor do I plan to watch it. But it's a new network. It's a network geared toward millennials because
it's all 10 minutes or less, right?
Yes, and they've got this unbelievable list of shows that they have that they've done or that they have planned to do, and they are the most outlandish. It's like mostly reality bullshit.
Yeah.
And it's just it just sounds horrible. It all just sounds awful. Anyway, boo. So Kim is seething, and you know, so Saul's gone. Kim is just left seething. Everyone gathers around Kevin, and immediately starts to formulate their strategy. And they say that they need to start with countering that copyright injunction. And Kevin gets up and just starts to leave the room, and Kim stops him and says, you know, we're your lawyers. We'll take care of it. And Kevin says, look, I'm just going to the men's room.
Yeah.
But as soon as he gets out of the office, he calls Saul. He immediately knows that number because he called a bunch of times on that commercial. We don't hear Saul on the other end, but we know Saul answers. And he says, where are you? Stay where you are. I'll meet you there. And then next we see them meeting in the parking garage. Kevin immediately confronts him and says, okay, what will it take? I'll let Aker stay in his shitty little house. I'll move my call center. Is that what it'll take? So Kevin is thrown in the towel here. And Saul says, you know, imagine this world, you know. First he tells Saul that you're a third-rate huckster who would sell your mother's organs to get what you want. And Saul, you know, just milks it for all it's worth. And then he just says, you know, imagine this world. Close your eyes and imagine. And then he lays it all out on the table. He says, imagine where Mr. Acker can keep his house and you pay him $45,000 for his pain and suffering. Plus you throw in a public apology. And while you're at it, you should compensate Olivia Bitsui $200,000 for the rights to her image. And then also she needs to receive full credit for the inspiration for the Mesa Verde logo on all future marketing. Oh, and you know what? Throw in a public apology for her as well. And then Saul promises that if all of those demands are met, those commercials will never see the light of day. And shouldn't they shake hands on that deal man to man? And he offers out his hand. So,
now, why does he go that far with it?
Well, I think at this point,
is it just because he knows he can?
I think that he thinks, I think he thinks that now that Acker and Bitsui are entitled to it.
He doesn't care about, he doesn't care about that though.
Yeah, I just don't understand why he, I mean, does he think he just can get that much from him at this point? Does he really care who, like, I mean, does he really care about if the two people get what's, quote, deserved to them? He didn't even know about this artist or this photographer until, you know, a week before when he's doing this research. So, like, is it just at this point his pride?
Maybe.
Like, saying, I can get more. Because you would think if he can get as much, like, what Kim wants, right, is for Acker to not get moved. That's really what she wanted, or at least for him to get enough to where he feels satisfied. That was why she even brought Jimmy on to begin with. She couldn't care less about this other person. She couldn't care less that he's taking more money from Kevin.
Yeah. I think it's, I just think it's his, his pride, his hubris maybe in why he can't, you know, he sees, here's an opportunity, a man who's willing to cave. I'm going to milk it for all it's worth. And I'm going to get what I feel like is justice. You know, he's really keen on that word justice. Yeah. Whether he feels like they deserve it or not, he feels like this is the justice that these two victims are deserved. And he can paint it up in his head and convince himself that he's on the right side here.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, it was great. It was a great scene. We're going to come back to the final Jimmy and Kim scene. But first, I want to cut to all of our Nacho, Gus, Mike, and Lalo stuff. So anything else to say about this, about any of the Saul and Mesa Verde stuff before we move away?
Oh, I mean, if we're going to move up, can we just go ahead and finish the Jimmy and Kim story?
No, I want to say that at the end.
Okay.
Because that's the cut to credits.
Okay.
All right. So Nacho is in a warehouse. He's waiting.
Yay, Nacho. He's back.
Nacho's back. Nacho and Lalo are back. Briefly, but they're back.
They're back.
And remember, we read the trailer for this, and it was Nacho seeks a higher help from a higher power. We were like, what the hell does that mean? Well, did we even speculate that higher power could be Mike? Because that's what it is.
But he didn't seek Mike's help necessarily. He seeked Gus's help.
He got Mike's help in getting rid of Lalo.
Gus handed him Mike. Yeah.
Now he appeals to Mike here. This is the scene. So he's in the warehouse waiting to meet with Gus. Gus arrives with Victor. Mike arrives separately in his car. And it's at that moment when he sees Mike coming in behind Gus and Victor that Nacho puts two and two together and figures out that Mike is Lalo's Michael.
Yeah.
I loved that.
Did Nacho never know Mike's name?
No, he knew Mike's name. He just never referred to him as Michael. And, you know,
I get that, but if you think it was maybe, well, I guess he never knew he was working with Fring, so that's the thing. Right? Because they worked way before Mike even was with Fring.
Right.
So that makes sense. Okay. Yes, so he would never think that he was working with him. Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
Sees him with Fring. That's right, because he really lays into him about that.
Yeah.
Sees him with Fring. Oh, you're Michael. I loved that. It was so subtle. It was perfect. Then Gus tells him to get on with it. So Nacho explains how Lalo is using Crazy Eight to rat out the drug dealers to the DEA. And Gus quickly tells Victor to promote other people to those dealers, to those dealer positions, so that they're the ones who get picked up and so that it protects their real people. And then Nacho lays out this other litany of plans that Lalo says he's going to do also to hurt Gus. And it's just a whole host of plots and ploys that Lalo has in store. Gus is super pissed. He tells Nacho that from now on, he reports to Mike. And then Gus and Victor leave. And before Mike can leave, Nacho confronts Mike, says, don't you know how bad that guy is? You know, his people shot me and left me to bleed out. So I'm glad Nacho knows, like, you know, how the sense of danger just been right. the fact of what they did to him, and of course never got him any medical treatment, right. which I'll never forgive them for. And then Mike reminds him that, you know, he says, I warned you when you started going after Hector Salamanca that there would be others that would come along that would be worse. I warned you this. And that's true. Mike is being truthful here. And that's when Nacho spills that Gus has essentially threatened Nacho Grande, which is our loving name for yes. Nacho's father, Papa. And Mike is definitely bothered by this fact, learning this fact. But he does say, first things first, they have to take care of Lalo.
Yeah.
And then the scenes that follow show us how Mike's plan unfolds. And it is brilliant, awesome. As all of Mike's plans are. But this one is no exception. So we see him reading some case files. And then he visits a librarian. And we learn that this librarian is, in fact, the witness who saw Lalo last season in the Travel Wire. And that was an actual scene where Lalo has locked the front door of the Travel Wire and has already killed Fred. And then there is a knock on the door and she's trying to get in. And he just, like, exactly like she says, he just points to the closed sign. Right. And she doesn't know what else to do. So she just leaves.
Right.
So she relays that story to Mike and he starts reminding her that perhaps there was a, you know, a really distinctive car in the parking yeah. lot. And she says she doesn't really know cars, but he's like, well, think about it. This car probably would have stood out to you. And she says, you know, I think there might have been. And so then he starts showing her pictures.
Yeah. He basically, as a cop, knows like exactly what is not admissible in evidence, but does it anyway. Like, goes ahead and shows her the picture and says, yeah. "And it, well, but although she's like, is this the car?" He's like, "Well, I can't say that one way or the other."
He's definitely leading her here, yes. but she does yeah. seem genuinely like, "I think that is the car," yeah. and of course, it is the car. So, yeah. so you know, that's good that he's jogging her memory correctly here to help yeah. justice.
Oh, a 1970 Chevy Nova,
Monte Carlo, 1970 Monte Carlo, gray yeah. 1970 Monte Carlo. You know, I also want to point out too, before we get into more of the machinations here, that they talk about how when she went back like an hour later to check on Fred, how she couldn't believe all the smoke and fire. How horrible the scene was. So yeah. that means that not only did Lalo kill Fred, but he also took time to set fire to the place before he continued his tale of Mike.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Sure, why not?
It's a little classic Lalo. Classic Lalo. Yeah.
Classic Lalo. Oh, yeah. He can, you know what? He's so good at starting fires and being so expedient about it.
Yeah.
But this also really helps us have the full understanding of why Don Bolsa a few episodes back was chastising him and saying that business with the Travel Wire was messy. Because right. of course they, as the cartel, had to cover it all up to protect Lalo, and I'm sure that was no easy feat.
Right.
Anyway, so Mike then convinces the librarian that actually she ought to go ahead and call the detective and report that car that she remembers. And she says it was so long ago, she doesn't even really remember that detective's name. And he's like, oh, don't worry, I've got it right here. Yeah. And he's got a yellow sticky note for Detective Tim Roberts, and it's got a phone number on it. And you know I called that one, too. And actually, that phone number's not in service.
Oh, boo.
So that one, they did not have they did not use Detective Tim Roberts.
I'm done with this show.
I know. I was like, come on. You could have done something there. But maybe not good to mix up like yeah. fake police voicemail police, with yeah. real one. It's probably not a good slippery slope. Anyway, so he convinces her to call Detective Tim Roberts. And by the way, maybe not mention that they had talked,
yeah.
that he had stopped by and talked to her. So that's what she does. And then we later see Mike is just hanging around like the break area at the police yes. station, and a mail boy comes by and is getting coffee, and he bullies that guy. He just kind of browbeats him into picking
what is
up
that?
An envelope from the floor and getting it delivered right away.
Yeah.
So next we see the packages being delivered. This, I presume, is Detective Tim Roberts. And this is great, Dean. This is brilliant. So the detective's speaking on the phone to, you know, I'm sure police get calls like this all the time. And it's really sad because it prevents them from doing their real job. But he's dealing with one of these annoying calls, like these cry wolf kind of call, you know, whatever.
Right.
This, we don't hear the person on the phone, but we can glean enough from the detective's phone call of what's happening, that the person he's speaking to on the phone is complaining about a smell coming from under the porch. And this detective is trying to explain that it's most likely a possum and they should get a flashlight and look under the porch. And he's kind of rolling his eyes. And clearly the caller on the other end keeps saying that perhaps it's a dead body. And finally, the detective convinces the caller that if you can't fit under the porch, most likely a dead body can't fit under the porch either. And he's opening the package that was delivered, you know, while he's on this call. But before we get to the contents of that envelope, I want to mention something that I actually heard. I want to give the right credit here, but I don't remember. Actually, I heard this on another podcast, but it was one of their listeners who had written in, who had sent that podcast an email with that, the fact that, so good listener, I hope they're listening to our podcast too, but this particular person pointed out that that call that the detective was having was in fact a Breaking Bad Easter egg. And I never would have caught it, but as soon as he started laying it out, I did. So this caller was most likely Jesse's aunt who owned the house that Jesse inherited, because Jesse told a story to Walt about how his aunt, whom he was close with, but she was a little crazy there toward the end, and she'd always call the police department and complain about dead bodies under her porch.
Hmm.
There you go. Breaking Bad Easter egg. You heard it here. Not first, but you heard
no.
it. All right.
Maybe
anyway.
Any of the other ones. So you heard it here.
So the detective opens the envelope and it's a report about a hit and run that was that took place on the same day as the Travel Wire murder. And he looks and looks a little further and finds out that hit and run was only 10 miles away from the Travel Wire. And oh my God, it's the same make and model of the car that librarian just conveniently remembered and called in today. What are the odds?
Yeah.
And this is, of course, the hit and run that's being referred to here is, of course, when Lalo broke through at the parking gate last season when he was tailing Mike. So
right.
I love that this comes full circle. This callback here is so perfect. The use of Mike being able to use those circumstances, you know, to his advantage, it's just perfect. Also, they can't read. They're trying to discern the officer's name who sent this, and it's such poor handwriting that they figure it's Officer McFloss. So Mike knows even how to make his handwriting just shitty enough so that they're not even going to be able to track who sent this package to them. It's great. Next, we see Nacho making a call to Mike, reporting Lalo's whereabouts, saying, you know, Lalo just left and he's driving south, wherever. And so then Mike immediately pulls out his fancy police radio and makes a legitimate sounding police report over this radio, reports Lalo's plates and a car in the car's approximate location to the dispatcher. And he hears the dispatcher call all units in the area. And then he immediately unplugs the radio. So crafty, Mike, crafty. Good thing you've got that radio. Don't know how you've managed to commandeer that from the time you were a cop, maybe, but cool. Anyway, and the final scene with Lalo is, or the only scene with Lalo, is he's driving in his car and we do see a cop pull up behind him and he kind of reaches to this gun that he's got under his seat, but quickly he sees that he is actually surrounded by several cop cars and he knows that he's totally busted and they are ordering him to throw his keys out of his car window. And so he finally gives in and that's what he does. And a great little shot of those keys dropping to the ground, too. I believe, now we know, when Saul is first introduced in Breaking Bad, He is terrified that either Lalo or Ignacio sent Walt and Jesse for him. He's terrified of this prospect. So we have to get him to a point of being completely terrified of these two. So I believe they're going to call Lalo or call Saul to defend Lalo. And somehow Saul is either going to go horribly wrong with it or something. Something to piss Lalo, I believe, will go to jail.
I don't know what the end game will be, but 100% that Saul is going to get called in to defend him.
Yes, but this could be the start of whatever it is that gets Saul so freaked out about why Walt and Jesse could have been after him.
Right.
So I don't think he's going to be able to get Lalo off. I think that's the start of it. Anyway, final scene. Woo-hoo. And it was a doozy, as if every scene in this episode hasn't been a doozy. So Jimmy's back at home. He's slow playing Smoke on the Water on that guitar that he scammed out of those, out of the, what are those twins' names? Anyway, that he, it was a couple seasons ago. And we've heard him play Smoke on the Water before. It was great. Great callback. Kim comes home. She's giving him the silent treatment. Jimmy's kind of smug a little bit. He's saying, hey, that was pretty perfect, right? You know, and then Jimmy's kind of just following her around the apartment. He explains that he had to pull that old switcheroo on her, so that he could catch her off guard and capture real anger out of her so that Rich wouldn't suspect anything. Clever plan, Jimmy's got an explanation for everything, right? And then, finally Jimmy asks her, what did Kevin say? And finally, Kim breaks the silence and she starts to explain that Kevin says he's tired of lawyers. And Jimmy, in all of his cockiness, interrupts her and says, wait, you got to do it in the voice, you know, do it in the voice, do it as Kevin. And she just looks at him angrily, does not do it in the voice.
Yeah.
And continues to say that Kevin is sick of lawyers. He's done with all of it. And that he is sticking with the handshake deal that they made. So it's letting us know that Kevin agreed to the terms that Jimmy laid out in the parking garage. Jimmy is thrilled. This is what they wanted. He suggests a celebratory dinner. And Kim is still kind of ignoring him, pouring a drink. And so Jimmy starts to apologize again and explain, you know, hey, it worked after all, everything they wanted. Acker gets to keep his house and gets a nice chunk of change. Olivia gets her reparations. And Kevin still gets his call center. It's all just a big win-win. And Kim says, no, Jimmy, you win. And he says, no, we win. And she says, no, I didn't win. And now I don't trust you. You played me. You made me the sucker again. You know, she points out this was not the first time.
Right.
And he says, no, I kept things from you to protect you, because if you were ever caught, God forbid, and had to testify under oath, you know, he's still claiming that he did all of this to protect her. He says, look, it'll never happen again. And she says, that's a lie.
Yeah.
And she says, look me in the eye and say that. Say that, looking me in the eye, and he can't. And she says, you lie, I lie, this has to end. And I was just like, I knew the breakup. I was like, oh God, here it is, the breaking up. I know it's happening right here. This is the moment. She says, we're at the breaking point. Either we end this now, and her voice cracks, and enjoy the time that we had and go our separate ways. And then she says, or, and he's like, or what? And she says, or maybe we get married. Cut to credits. What the fuck?
Here's my thinking. If they get married, they can't testify against each other in a court of law, right?
Yes, that's why she said it, because they were just talking about how he was trying to protect
her. Yeah, so then in that case, they can still have the relationship, even as fucked up as it is, and they can lie to each other, or not even lie. At that point, they can be honest with each other.
Yeah.
But
incredible performance by Ray Sehorn. Yeah. Incredible, incredible. While she is just laying into him, it was amazing. Oh my God, give these two Emmys, please.
Yeah, and that's so, our way of basically saying, like, if we're not married, we can't be, like, if you feel that way is why you can't be honest,
mm-hmm.
then we can't be honest with each other, so we can't be together. But if we're married, then it's a 100, and that's what she tried to get, you know, a while ago. We're not going to lie to each other. We're on the board with each other. We're 100% yeah. with each other. But if that's your reasoning of why you still can't be honest with me, well, let's put that off the table.
I didn't see it coming.
Well, and obviously, Jimmy's not going to be able to handle it. Yeah.
Now, I want to speculate here for just a minute. Do you think they will get married? I do. I do.
I do. I like trucks. I do.
I do.
I don't know. There's still two seasons. I mean, there's still a potentially another season left.
There's time for them to get married and divorced, for all right. we know.
Or for her to die. Yeah.
Now we could still go back on my theory. I think I've said this before. I think I said it in our preview episode, our Better Call Saul preview episode, but there is still the chance that they get married and we're married throughout the entire course of Breaking Bad. And we never saw it because we were never brought in to Saul's world in Breaking Bad. We did not see Saul's personal life. I'm just saying, it's possible.
Boo, retcon.
No, why?
Because retcons don't work.
I trust Peter Gould. I trust Vince Gilligan. I trust all of these writers. They are not going to make it shitty and stupid. They'll do it right. But I think that would be a cool twist.
If they do that, then that means then if season six, the only way that could happen, which makes sense, is if season six or at least half of season six is all in the quote unquote present or future.
Not all of it. It's 13 episodes.
Most of it. Like, well, I know, but like one episode of them going all the way to the future, like, that's dumb. That's dumb.
I want to get back to Roby's email real quick too. He's just got a couple more comments.
Oh, you want to skip over your wishful thinking. That's what you want to do.
It's not wishful thinking. I'm seeing how that possibility could have happened. And I like that it's a perspective in Breaking Bad that we didn't get, but that doesn't mean it didn't exist. A little redcon, I'll give you that, but it's probably not the case. It's probably not, because you're right. It would turn so many people off, and these show creators are way too conscientious to do that. So Roby writes to miketvpodcast@gmail.com. I bet Mike gets Nacho out somehow. You know, I would love to think that. Maybe. Yeah, maybe Mike does, because he couldn't save Werner Ziegler. Maybe he does make it his mission to get Nacho and Nacho Grande. I'm going to throw Nacho Grande out there too. Like, Mike's going to really try to get them out of it, right?
I think, maybe. No, I don't think Mike cares about them. I think Nacho gets his dad out. I think Nacho dies.
Yeah. God, I hate that. Then Roby, when is Jimmy going to make enough money to get rid of that car? Roby's really hung up on Jimmy's car. Don't worry, Roby. We know Saul drives a Cadillac with a lawyer up license plate. So it's coming. It's coming. There'll probably be a whole episode dedicated to it. It's coming. And then he just writes, yup. Oh, and then, you know what? Roby reveals here he's kind of a Kim hater. He says, I finally realized why I've been annoyed with Kim for 5+ seasons. She created this idealized code for herself as a lawyer and person, so she is constantly internally battling her true nature, which is canny Kim. Just be who you are, Kim. The only time I enjoy her character is when she's plotting with Jimmy. Oh, Roby, I enjoy her character all the time.
I think that's BS. I think her true character is her moral compass. I think that's why she's eventually going to be out of the show. She doesn't stick with Jimmy because she actually has morals. The fact that she showed the beginning of this episode where her shitbag mother wanted to like pull her into it, and she had the morals to say, no, I'm gonna walk home. Like, she's not
a, I don't know if it's bag. Morals, it's stubbornness. She was angry at her mother. No, she also had enough common sense not to get in the car compass. With a drunk. It's stubborn. It's pig, it's bullheaded. She's got a bullheaded streak.
It's moral compass, and it's also that womanly thing where they want to fix a guy. That's why she's stuck with Saul, because she still thinks she can fix him somehow and make him right.
She's got to know he's way beyond fixing at this point. She's fooling herself. I don't know that she's got more of a moral compass than Jimmy, certainly, but she's done some pretty heinous things herself.
Heinous? She hasn't fucked over anyone like personally, or like screwed anybody over personally, like Jimmy will and has.
True. That's true.
She's fucked over corporations. She's done things to help people individually, but she's never done something to hurt somebody.
That's true. That's true. And even when she did probably her worst thing, her vandalizing by throwing the beer bottles, then even the next day she's out there cleaning those up.
Yeah.
Yeah, Kim is, she's very troubled. She's very troubled. Well, so, Dean, who broke the most bad in this episode?
I mean,
it's gotta be Jimmy, right? Gotta be.
Yeah.
Everybody else was pretty good.
Yeah. In fact, if maybe second by a long shot would be even Kevin. For just not being able to play it cool and letting his emotions get the better of him.
I mean, or but Mike for working the system a little bit, you know.
Mike was the best awesomeness. His whole little spiel was fantastic how he set that whole thing up for sure. But yeah, Jimmy did the most stupid shit and shady shit this episode.
All right. I'm excited. We've only got 4 more episodes left this season. I have no idea how it's going to play out. You think we'll get a marriage this season? You think we'll see them elope or something?
I don't know. I do feel like there's only 4 episodes left. Like, and I feel like this is how this show usually is. Mm-hmm. It's just, it seems like nothing big is going to happen until maybe the last episode or two.
So I don't know. I think curious. We're full steam ahead. I think every episode's just going to get bigger and bigger from here.
Yeah, but full steam ahead for this show doesn't really mean anything. That's like, true. So it's like instead of walking, now you're just like walking fast.
Full steam ahead is like, oh, what's his next commercial going to be?
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, it's just.
So, I mean, something's going to happen, but like, I.
Well, he's definitely. Oh, good.
I think the biggest, like the most ramped up thing we're going to see clearly is going to be whatever ends up happening with Lalo.
Yeah. He's right? Definitely like, going to defend Lalo, like be called to defend Lalo.
Yeah. That's where we're going to see the ramped up action. Now, yes, of course, between him and Kim, something's going to happen, but action wise, it's going to be whatever happens with Lalo.
Now who's going to take over for the Salamancas while Lalo is incarcerated? Will this be Nacho?
I assume Nacho's still like how he was before Lalo showed up, at least in that area. Right. Unless Tuco somehow comes out of jail.
I was just going to say, is it time for Tuco to be out of jail yet?
I don't know.
Ooh, I'm not ready for the return of Tuco. I don't think.
Or is Crazy 8 even going to step up at this point?
Crazy 8 was below Nacho. There's no way.
That's right.
All right. any other thoughts on this episode before we close out?
I know you keep saying we're going to get into it. I still don't think we are. But do you think by the end of this season, mm-hmm. we will see either Walt or Jesse?
I don't believe we're going to catch glimpses of Walt and Jesse until next season, to be quite honest. I think the Hank and Gomi presence in this season was probably enough.
I still believe that if we see any of Walt through this series, it is like the most sideways glimpse of Walt, like Hank almost like seeing Walt as his brother-in-law. I don't think his character plays into this story at all.
No, I don't believe his character is in this story at all. But
I do think we could see Jesse pop in and starting to work for Crazy 8 or work with Crazy 8 because that's how they get it. Because he knows Crazy 8 through, you know, and you know what I mean? Like, so he knows him and that's how they get to him at the beginning of.
What if Jesse is, what if Jesse is brought in to be like one of these, like, dealers that they put in place to be able to get, you know, like that's maybe Jesse doesn't get arrested, but Jesse's kind of put in that position to protect Gus's real dealers. Right.
But we also know Jesse cooks too. So like almost as if like he starts accidentally getting in on their territory because he's cooking himself.
Yeah.
So I do think, but I don't know if that'll happen until next season. Right. Right.
And you're right. I don't see Walt. If we see anything in a Walt, it'll be like he's walking out of the high school to his car or something randomly, like that. It'll be real in the background.
Yeah,
I agree with that. Now, I do believe there's potential for this show to bump all the way up to the events of Breaking Bad, up to the point where Walt and Jesse pick up Saul. Like, that would be kind of a cool scene for it to end on, with them bringing him out into the desert with the hood over his head.
I still have the hope that we're going to eventually, whether it's even obviously at the beginning of the next season, but then even if it's 13 episodes, I'm hoping that, because the past few seasons have all been 10, right?
Mm-hmm, correct.
So I'm hoping the last three episodes will be all caught up to the end.
Yeah.
And I still think there's some way where either
Jimmy get back together.
I still think there's a chance where we get that connection to Jesse, to where somehow then if there possibly could be a, if they ever wanted to do one, not that they had to, but it could lead to a potential
sequel
season of with Jesse in Alaska and Saul now in Alaska.
Wow. That would be really coming full circle. All right, I'm going to have to put some more thought into that. I like it, but I'm a soft-hearted one. I want a happy reunion and a happy ending for Jimmy and Kim. It's probably not going to happen.
She's dead.
Stop it with that. Okay. Any other thoughts? We'll wrap up. If not.
No, I'm good. I enjoyed this episode. I can't wait to finish the season.
Same. Well, we thank everyone for sticking with us and all of our coverage of not only A Better Call Saul, but we're doing in-depth coverage of Westworld as well. The plan is we're working on it soon as maybe this COVID crisis clears up and I can actually like work on my computer with Tim and get our own stream going. He's going to set it all up for us. So eventually we'll have a Mike TV stream. We've teased this before, but I believe it is just right out there on the horizon for us, Dean. It's going to happen soon. Sure. So I'm excited. But in the meantime, please keep listening as these episodes drop in the Radio Labyrinth feed. We appreciate you guys taking a listen and giving us some feedback. That email address again, and we know everybody's in front of their computers, they're home all day. So drop us an email. It's miketvpodcast@gmail.com.
Yeah, or you can find us on Twitter at MikeTV1 or at Rockdale_Tiger.
Yep. So we'd love to hear from you. Better Call Saul, Westworld, or any other shows that you've heard us discuss or recommendations. You know, we want to talk about all the TV. So hit us up.
Yeah, all the TV, including The Masked Singer season 3.
No, except
right? Uninterrupted through COVID-19.
Or any of that shit they're pumping out over on Quibi. All right. Well, thank you again, everybody. We will talk to you again in just a few short days. And until next time, I'm Lisa.
And I am Dean.
Please remember to keep it thorough. And wash your hands.
Yeah, and wash your hands.